We're doing a Jelts here. We were chit chatting about the Baltimore Ravens. I know this is a Philly centric podcast, but you and I were just chatting about them. I think we're on the same page. I completely agree with you. But go on what you were saying with the Ravens and some coaching that we could have had.
So the Ravens, and I could be wrong. I don't think he's the defensive coordinator.
What's his name?
His name is Denard Avery. He was our defensive backs coach. And let me see. Avery. Let's see. So, or Gennard Avery.
All right. Yeah. Avery. Okay. No, you're all good. I'm looking him up too.
Denard Avery played for us. This is Denard Avery.
Let's see. So he's a coach for the Ravens.
Yeah.
Oh, Avery, no.
Raven.
Oh, wait, when? No, is it? No. I'm trying to figure who this is now.
Shit, so then I might be thinking of the complete wrong guy.
Well, that's cool, though. We can roll with this because I think we're on the same page about the Ravens anyway. I'm telling you what, and we'll get to the dumpster fire that the Eagles have turned into.
Oh, Denard Wilson.
Okay.
He's their defensive backs coach. Gotcha. He was our defensive backs coach in Philly.
That's right.
Our defensive passing game coordinator and defensive backs coach. He, to me, should have been made the defensive coordinator instead of fucking Sean Desai. He was just let go and signed with them, with the Ravens, where he's gone on to help make the Ravens one of the best defenses in the league. We went into the draft and into free agency, as far as the undrafted free agents, and got a shit ton of young defensive backs. He would have been able to spin gold out of these defensive backs. Look at who we got, all right? Keely Ringo, Mario Goodrich, you have Eli Ricks, you have Josh Jobe, you have all these young dudes. Sidney Brown, the continued development. He's a guy that developed Reed Blankenship.
Yeah.
Right? The number one vote getter as far as safeties are concerned in the NFC. And so he developed these other guys. Man, he could have worked wonders with these guys. And what we saw again on Monday night against the fucking, for some reason, completely unbeatable by the Philadelphia Eagles, no matter how good they are, Seattle Seahawks, was Slay is out. Bradbury looks like trash. We have a bunch of injuries at safety and in the defensive backfield. We had Sidney Brown playing a lot, who looks like he has the drive, looks like he has a skill set that if they can just slow him down a bit so he doesn't miss the tackle, so he's not over pursuing, he will be a good player. Keely Ringo, who has just seen the most time that he's seen this season, looked really good for a rookie playing in his first NFL game.
Yeah, I agree.
I was very happy with his performance, as far as, you know, as happy as I can be when the team just sucks as bad as they did last night. That guy should have been, if not on the staff, should have been defensive coordinator. Even if he's an assistant defensive coordinator in the position that fucking Matt Patricia, of all people, holds. Matt Patricia, the same defensive coordinator who we absolutely decimated with Nick Foles at quarterback in the Super Bowl when we beat the Patriots then. Matt Patricia, the same guy who went to Detroit and was completely and utterly overmatched and outcoached in every single fucking game where he was their head coach. Matt Patricia, who was not even a good, when they realized he sucked as a defensive coordinator under Belichick, they moved him to offensive coordinator under Belichick. And guess what he did there? He fucking sucked because he's a shit coach and he shouldn't be in the fucking league. He shouldn't be coaching above fucking Pop Warner.
Yeah. Last night was an absolute just, I don't even know where to begin. So now we're talking third loss in a row. And don't get me wrong, we finished with the so-called gauntlet. You know, we were supposed to lose against the Cowboys the first time, supposed to lose against the Chiefs, supposed to lose against the Bills. That's all the how it was written. They roll through 3-0, and then everything came crashing down. So the thing that you and I talked about this in our preview, and mainly because the Seahawks have always been a problem.
15 years. We haven't beaten them in 15 years
now. Right. So this was something that wasn't like a complete surprise, but the timing is terrible.
Not only is the timing terrible, but the way it happened is terrible because we started off with a lead. It was 7-0. Then it was 10-0. Then it was 10-3. And then they scored another touchdown, and it was 10-10. We scored did they kick a field goal? Yeah, then they kicked a field goal. Then we scored a touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of running out the clock like we should have, especially when DeAndre Swift has the intelligence to drop on the ground before he goes out of bounds so he doesn't stop the fucking clock, when you're running down a clock, you don't throw the fucking football. You don't do it. During this game, there were so many ill-advised throws. Not only that, you could tell that Jalen didn't have the zip on his arm because he was coming into this game so sick that he not only had to fly on a separate plane, but he had to sit away from everyone on the bench so he didn't get them sick too. You ran him 13 fucking times.
Yeah.
You make him throw that ball to Quez Watkins, who has not. And here's the deal. I'm going to shit on him, but this is a goddamn legit stat. The last five times we've thrown him the ball have been two interceptions, a dropped pass, and two fumbles.
Yeah. That was actually the first comment I made, like, of all people. Now, granted, to me, it's like I'm more prone to see or wanting to see Devontae Smith out there, maybe catching the long run. You know, AJ, maybe, but that's just not what he's known for at this point with what he's been doing with the Eagles. I think that's what we all know. He's just, yeah, he's your number one receiver, but he's not going to be your deep threat. I would rather see Devontae out there, and quite frankly, why don't you throw Zacchaeus out there? Because quite frankly, Quez just I was shocked to even see that just.
Well, here's the thing. Olamide Zacchaeus is sitting on the fucking sideline, can adequately fill the same role that you have Quez Watkins in.
Exactly. That's why I was like, at least, I mean, but I just, I don't know. I don't get
and
it.
And he'll catch the ball.
Yeah.
That's the big difference. There's your difference, kids. He's going to catch the ball where Quez will not. And you know what? The coaching staff just continues to make shitty decisions, game in and game out. Then the Sean Desai, Matt Patricia thing, you know what? Yeah, I get it. You had to make a change. But Matt Patricia ain't it.
No, that's not a change you make. You know, we've talked about this before. Addition by subtraction. Sometimes you have to take away, and, you know, you go with maybe someone with less experience or whatever, just to see what else you can get out of him, because you know what you're going to get out of Matt Patricia. Right. It's going to be nothing.
Right.
So you're putting someone in that role. Yeah, you're adding somebody to that role, but you're making it worse.
Right.
And so to me, it's like, okay, I'm going to, you know, take someone away, but let's give someone else a shot.
Right.
At this point. And like you said, going back to the Ravens coach, the current Ravens D-backs coach, Denard Wilson, you're talking about a guy that with coaching and scouting experience now going on 15 years, and most of that being DB experience.
And where do we need the most help right now? our defensive backfield. Our linebackers are shit too.
To have that guy, if he would have been, and I completely agree, if he would have been there the entire season, and then let's say he's on the staff now, and instead of Matt Patricia, you have Denard getting that bump. Yeah, maybe he doesn't have that DC experience, but you know what? 15 years of scouting and defensive backs coach experience, you can't tell me that, you know, that's none the better than what Matt Patricia brings to the table.
Right.
Or really, really anyone else, because Matt Patricia is terrible. I mean, just no. I don't know where this goes from here, but now we're into the last 3 weeks of the regular season. You have the Giants twice, sandwiched in with the Cardinals. And look, the Giants are not great. We know that. Tommy DeVito's, I think, got a little bit of a chip on his shoulder. And I think he's going to do everything he possibly can to try to win both games. Yeah. If not at least one, he'll try to win two. I have nothing to say about Arizona. In fact, if we don't beat Arizona by more than two touchdowns, they should just take the Eagles playoff spot away.
Look, man, here's the thing, though. We're not beating either of those teams by more than a touchdown. I'm telling you this right now, and that is if we beat them. There is every chance in the world that we go 0-3.
Oh, I know. I know.
Because I have zero faith. And Mike Missinelli said it last night on the Pond La Hockey post-game show. Last night was the night that hope died for this team. Because I have zero confidence that any team in the NFL is going to let themselves get beat by the Philadelphia Eagles at this point. And at this point, the way that they're playing, what I'm hearing from players who are being interviewed, the body language that I'm seeing on the field and on the bench and on the sidelines, they don't care. And no, I shouldn't say they don't care, because there are players that care, but right, they are not a unified front.
They're not a team.
They're opponents. No, they're not. They are not a team at this point. And the fact of the matter is, if Nick Sirianni can't figure it out before the end of the season, there's some real questions that need to be answered. Now, obviously, I don't think you fire him this offseason.
No, no.
But at this point, that turns 2024 into a make-or-break season.
Yep.
And if you can't turn it around and get this team going cohesively and get things working the right way, then he's got to be gone after 2024.
Right, and there's a level. Now there's a level of expectation too. Now, and look, we can kid ourselves here all we want. Look, Super Bowls are few and far between, so even getting there is a tough task. That expectation's going to be tough to carry in year in and year out. However, the way the team is built now is built to win. They were just there. Yeah, you do have a lot of veteran guys that have, you know, they're aging up, maybe a little more injury prone. They might be missing some games, whatever. But quite frankly, those are the only guys that are still showing up. yeah, this was kind of like it, you know, and then you kind of retool to see it fall apart after starting where they did. Through the first 11-12 weeks of the season, it's not good. Right. The wheels fell off rather quickly. And, you're right. I think they could possibly do 0-3. I do think they do eke a Cardinals win out. And I hope to God it's by two touchdowns. that, you know, I say the Eagles are a dumpster fire, but the Cardinals are just bad.
Yeah. Now, here's an even more telling, depending upon, I'm hearing a lot of people saying that they've lost their belief in Jalen Hurts, which I don't for one minute like entertain that. I am going to say that, you know, there were thoughts in that in my head of, oh shit, do we have another Carson situation on our hands? But we don't. They're two completely different people. There's no way. But that said, here's a very, very telling stat. In the modern day NFL, and I'm talking like the last 20 years, only one quarterback has ever lost their first appearance in the Super Bowl and then won one eventually.
Mm.
And that's John Elway.
Hmm.
And that was Super Bowl 21 and 22. He lost back to back.
Right.
Oh, no. Yeah, 21 and 22. And then 24, he lost. And then he won 32 and 33. So that's still a pretty big fucking gap between first appearances and then winning.
And that's that's a hell of a gap. And you're talking, think about this in retrospectively. So let's say, and again, we're talking apples and oranges here. The way John Elway was, the way Jalen is, the way Jalen's game is compared to the way John Elway's game is, can also compare to the way the game was played, you know, 30 years ago. Boy, two different people. And I don't know, would you really, to me, do you anticipate Jalen making a Super Bowl 10, 12 years from now? I don't know, you know, let alone winning it.
I would like to hope so.
I would hope so too, but I mean, I just wired differently. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I mean, the thing is though, Jalen, the big difference is really not that big of a difference, because they both, Elway wasn't like a scrambling quarterback like Jalen was. He was mobile enough though. There were times when he would get on, and no pun intended, he would get on his horse and ride. you know, and Jalen obviously has been known for using his legs, but Jalen has improved so monumentally from the pocket, and he's shown that he can win games from the pocket. But it, like you said, it's two completely different eras.
Yeah,
I'm just thinking about
the pacing. You know what I mean?
Right. If we go back before that, you're talking Bob Greasy. So lost Super Bowl VI and won Super Bowl VII and VIII, and Len Dawson, who lost Super Bowl I and won Super Bowl IV.
Right.
And that's it. Those are the three that have won them after losing it in their first appearance.
Right. And maybe it's more akin to that. And I see that more than, and I think that's why I had such high hopes for this season, because I see that more with the way this team's built now. Built to win now. You have people that have already won it, still on the team. They know what it's like. They want to do it again. You know, that sort of thing. I certainly see that happening. Maybe, let's say, you know, within like a couple of years type thing, if everything fell right for Jalen anyway. Just talking about him, not talking about the rest of the team necessarily. But for to think about like the modern football example of Elway, man, I don't know, man. Maybe it's just like that. To me, it's like burning yourself out. The way the game is played now, I just can't see him sustaining, which sucks. I want to, you know.
Right.
I don't know.
And so check out this. Now, this is a little bit of an older stat. It's from December of 2017. So there, it may have changed since then. I don't think it has. Of the 31 head coaches to win at least one Super Bowl, obviously that's changed. Mm-hmm. 27 of them won their first championship within the first five seasons with that team.
Hmm. Interesting.
So only Chuck Knoll, 6 years in Pittsburgh, John Madden, 8 years in Oakland, Tom Landry, 12 years in Dallas, and Bill Cowher, 14 years in Pittsburgh, needed more than 5 years to capture their first ring.
Hmm, that's interesting. I didn't realize it took those that long for a couple of those guys. Yeah. Of course, Landry was a coach for like ever.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, you know.
Yeah.
And they suggest that no team has ever won. No quarterback and head coach combo has ever won a Super Bowl together after the first 5 years of their pairing.
Hmm. Interesting.
So right now, Nick and Jalen are on year three. And they're not exactly on
the other. And to me, the way this season started, this was the time to do it. Because really the next, you know, when you're going to start losing these guys out, you know, and don't get me wrong. I think they've done a hell of a job with drafting and getting some of these guys coming up. And I think their defense at least, you know, on the line is going to be good for years to come. Now, I don't know what to say defensive back wise. I think there's some nice young talent there and it may, you know, come together. I also think at some point they're going to have to, you know, work a trade, free agency, something, really get something going there. Same thing's going to be said for the offensive line because you're going to have some retirements coming here within the next year or two. You know, whether that's, you know, Batman himself, you know, or Lane Johnson, or, you know, some of these other guys. They're getting older, and it's and don't get me wrong. Again, there's a lot of young guys coming up, and they've done a good job with that. But, you know, there's going to be a little turnover here, and you know, again, not to misuse a football term, but that's what it is. It's going to be some player turnover, and it's going to take a couple of the years to get that back, at least.
So let's go through the list real quick with just players that. So looking at your, let's see if I can. It's not. Yeah. All right. Depth chart. We're going to go to the Philly on the Eagles depth chart.
Okay.
All right. So looking at the offense as far as wide receivers go, AJ Brown, Olamide Zaccheaus. I think Zaccheaus is on a 1-year deal. He'll probably be gone after this year. Devontae Smith, Quez Watkins. Watkins has to be gone after this year.
Yeah, he's gone. And then Julio Jones is there too, and I believe he'll be out because he's pretty much going to retire.
Yeah, Julio Jones is going to retire. Britton Covey is a punt returner.
Yeah, he doesn't really count. Yeah.
All right. On your offensive line, left tackle, Jordan Mulata. Backup is Fred Johnson. Mulata's here for he's going to be here for a while. Landon Dickerson at left guard. He'll be here for a while. Sue Opetta is the backup. He'll be here for a while. Jason Kelce, I wouldn't be surprised if the shit from this year pushes him out the door. If he's like, you know what?
I'm done. I'm
tired of it.
Yeah.
And he's done. All right. So then we go to right guard because this is where the guy that's supposed to replace him is, Cam Jurgens, who's starting at right guard. And honestly, he's been hurt so much this year. I don't know if he can stand up for a full season.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a problem.
He's good when he's in there, but I don't know that he's going to be the answer now at either guard or center because he can't stay healthy. His backup is Tyler Steen. He was a tackle in college, now playing guard. I've liked what I've seen from him, but the fact that Sua Opetta is starting in front of him when Cam Jurgens is out seems problematic. All right. So now he can play center or guard. So maybe somehow you Frankenstein him and Jurgens into the center and guard positions and that takes over. But then you got right tackle where Lane Johnson isn't going to play forever. You know, he may play longer than Kelce because he at least, I mean, Kelsey's playing on a year to year basis. Lane Johnson hasn't really given us any indication that he's ready to go. All right. And please, for the love of God, stay because we do need you. Jack Driscoll's his backup. He's okay.
He's there.
Yeah. I don't want to see him in any extended circumstances. Tight end, Goddard, Jack Stoll, Grant Calcaterra, and Albert O. Goddard's the only one who's really shown the catching ability. Stoll's a good blocker. I was really excited for Calcaterra, but it seems like he's not going to do anything at this point. And Albert O was supposed to be a good receiver, but can't block worth a damn, so he can't even get on the field. All right. And then, of course, we've got Jalen Hurts. Mariota's gone. He's garbage anyway. And Tanner McKee, who showed some bright spots and could be a good number two.
Right.
Still don't know what I think of him as a potential starter if Jalen gets hurt, but that's neither here nor there. Now, we move into obviously the offensive line is an issue, even though it's not an issue, just because of the lack of depth there.
Right, lack of depth, and again, you do have a bit of, you know, possible turnover. I know Kelsey's, like you said, year to year. I hope Lane Johnson stays a lot longer than what I'm hoping, but again, you're aging up here. I mean, these guys have a lot of wear on the tires. So,
And then all right, let's look at our defense. So, the only you only have two players listed at defensive end. You've got Brandon Graham and Josh Sweat. Now, I love BG. He's played well this year in spot duty. Who knows how much longer he's going to play? He says he wants to play for like another 10 years or some, you know, insane stuff. And as far as I'm concerned, keep him at this point. But we do need more depth at defensive end. And I know we're not really using, you know, Hassan Reddick and Nolan Smith as linebackers as much as we are throwing them in as edge rushers and whatever. But that, you know, you're putting a lot of mileage on those tires between Brandon Graham and Josh Sweat. And maybe part of the issue is they're tiring out and not getting home as often.
Right.
And then you look at the middle of your defense where you've got Fletcher Cox, Milton Williams, Moro Ojomo, Jordan Davis, Jalen Carter, and Marlon Tuipulotu. Cox is probably gone after this year because I think he's another one that's on like a one-year deal or his deal has a poison pill or something like that. He's been probably their second best defensive lineman this year.
Yeah.
And which would be good, except for you've got Jalen Carter and Jordan Davis. So Jordan Davis has played well. And I'm not disappointed in how he's played, and I'm not disappointed in how Jalen Carter's played. I was just hoping that Davis would take even more of a step, but I get it. Baby steps.
Yeah, you're talking, it was year two. I mean,
yeah, he's still gonna develop. And so I'm not necessarily worried about our defensive tackle. Especially with Moro Ojomo back there developing, and Milton Williams and Marlon Tuipulotu, they'll be fine. The line, I'm not super concerned about. It's no, everything behind it that I'm concerned about.
Yep.
So Hassan Reddick, dude, he's still getting sacks, but he's disappearing in games. And that's scary, especially for how much he's going to command, because he's going to be a free agent soon. So you've got to make the decision this offseason whether or not you want to bring him back, or whether you want to trade him, or if he's going to be cut, because he's going to be playing essentially on a one-year contract. And we all know most of the time players don't like going into the season on a one-year contract because they don't want to risk getting hurt.
Right.
You've got Nolan Smith who got, if he could stay healthy, would be good. I would like him, but he's hurting his shoulder every other play and then he's out. So that looks like a bad pick unless he can get it together. Granted, rookie year, maybe they'll figure something out and get him hooked up. Maybe he gets surgery in the offseason and it repairs it. But if he's not going to be available, the most important ability is availability. And if he's not going to be there, then, you know, you have to figure out something for him. Patrick Johnson played a lot last night. That was like the only game this season he's played a lot. So, you know, it's tough. It's a small sample size. Nick Morrow's played very well. He's just not good enough to be a starter.
Right.
Ben Van Sumeren, we haven't seen anything out of aside from special teams. He's a really, really raw rookie talent. They're going to have to mold him into a linebacker that's capable of playing in the NFL. Zach Cunningham probably won't be here next year. Shaq Leonard won't be here next year. So you need to work on your weak side linebackers. You need to work on your edge rushers. You need to work on your middle linebackers. And I know Howie doesn't like to commit money there. But guess what, dude? It didn't fucking work this year.
Yeah.
Not having linebackers did not work. Get that through your thick fucking skull.
Yeah, you can't just go through and pick off like trash heap all the time. And right. And that's not disrespectful. I just, you know, that's basically what's going on. I mean.
Right. No, well, dude, it's not disrespectful at all. We signed two guys in training camp. Cut them. Well, no. We signed two guys in training camp. One of them fucking retired after his first preseason game.
Right.
Then, before the first game of the season, and I called that we were going to do this with Morrow, but we cut Nicholas Morrow and we cut Zach Cunningham and then signed him back to the team. Or no, maybe we didn't cut Cunningham. We cut Morrow and signed him after week one. Yeah. He was on the practice squad, but he got signed when N'Kobe Dean got hurt. And N'Kobe Dean, honestly, I really want to like the kid, but he's been hurt too much. We don't know what he is, so right. How can you rely on him? This was supposed to be his breakout year where he shows us why he's here, and he hasn't been able to because he's been hurt. At corner, You've got Bradbury, who we've already discussed needs to be gone. Josh Jobe, who I don't fucking know. He was a good special teams player. Keely Ringo, who acquitted himself well yesterday. Darius Slay, who, again, I don't know, man. Did he lose a step? Has it been this injury? What's the deal with him? And Eli Ricks. And Eli Ricks, again, another one that he's rookie. He would benefit from having an actual good defensive backs coach to train him up.
Right.
We have the Bradley Roby, who won't be here next year. It'll be Avante Maddox if he can stay healthy. Kevin Byard at safety, which I don't remember what his contract was, if he's going to be a free agent after this year or what. He's been showing some good leadership, which we'll talk about in a minute, but he hasn't really been producing. And you've got Reed Blankenship and Sidney Brown, who have already talked a little bit about Sidney Brown.
I flipped open Sport Track real quick just out of curiosity. So the Eagles would have Byard through 24.
Okay.
And all right. Because he had signed a 5-year deal in 19 with Tennessee. And apparently he signed – oh, I'm sorry. It was a no, I don't know. I'm getting a couple of conflicting things here, but it's definitely through 24.
Okay.
So that's where it would be at.
So, and I'm not upset with that because of the leadership role he's taken. Prior to the news of Sean Desai getting kicked up to the box, Kevin Byard had a meeting with all the players and with the coaching staff of the defense and suggested that instead of going with the defensive coordinator and the defensive coaching staff's scouting reports, that all of the defensive backs should do their own scouting reports on the opposing players. And he said it got all the young guys excited about it. And they brought some interesting stuff to the table that we may not have gotten had it just been the coaches.
Right.
Tendencies, looking at stuff like that. And so to see him taking that active role and then seeing what happened, and knowing that before we knew what we know about as far as the issues with the coaching staff, it's just very interesting. I'm really concerned still about the defensive coaching staff, but it's good to see him taking that active role. But yeah, man, there's so much room for improvement, especially on the defensive side of the ball, and both the offensive and defensive coordinators. They need wholesale change. And granted, you can't really do that this far into a season. You're not going to install a whole new defense and a whole new offense before the playoffs. It's impossible. That's why training camp is what it is. That time, the mini camps, all of the OTAs, all that stuff is for installing defenses and installing offenses and getting your playbook, getting your players up to speed, knowing what to play. But the problem is, going forward, we're going to be using the same high school offense and high school defense that everyone and their mother can read. The Tony Romo is calling out the play before they even snap the ball, where you're running every single play from a shotgun because you don't know what you're doing. And you can't do that in the NFL and win games. You can't.
Before we wrap up here, honest take. I know we've already chit-chatted about this. Last three games, Giants, Cardinals, Giants. I know you said that it could easily go 0-3. But honest opinion, what do you think?
I think 2-1. I think we lose one of the games to the Giants. I think we end up as the 5 seed. And we... if we end up as the 5 seed, I forget who we play, but it's not going to be a home game.
Now, there's some interesting things we have to discuss here, too, real quick about this. There's an interesting game happening here that's not Eagles-related. I'm really curious to see how it's going to shake out. Ravens and Niners. I think it's a lot to be said with this game. We have a potential Super Bowl preview, honestly, between this game. Now, to me, this is the make-or-break game for how this whole thing is going to flush out. you have a super high powered offense, the Niners, versus a insane defense and really another good offense for the Ravens. I just wonder how that's going to really clash. And I think if there's one team right now that's going to beat the Niners, it's going to be the Ravens. And the Niners kind of went on a bit of a slump themselves, losing three games in a row. And again, including against PJ Walker, led Cleveland Browns. So I don't know. As much as I'd like to say that we're completely dead in the water, and of course we have Dallas lurking as well. Dallas just got absolutely blown out by the Bills, though. It's interesting. It really is. Ball's in Eagles court right now. They need to do 3-0. They need to.
They need
3-0, and they have to have some things obviously fall their way. Well, but the Giants, Cardinals, Giants, to me, should be an easy 3-0. But I agree that I believe, unfortunately, that Tommy DeVito could sneak one by us. So,
well, here's the deal. Technically, we still hold the tiebreaker of strength of schedule over the Dallas Cowboys at the end of the season.
Yeah.
we currently have the same record because, and we're in second place in the NFC East because Dallas hasn't played, or no, it's common opponent's record or something like that. I don't remember. It's something, there's a technicality in there that until the end of the season, if we finish this with the same record as them, by the end of the season, we would, even though, again, we're right now in second place in the NFC East, we would win the NFC East and finish, I think, in this. I don't think we can finish. We're either going to finish as the second seed or the fifth seed. And I don't think that there's any way that that can change. And that's the same with the Cowboys. Is there, if they win the NFC East, they are the second seed. If they don't win the NFC East, they're the fifth seed. So what it plays out as is if we finish out the season the way we should have, based on being 10-1 at one point, and we end up winning all three games, and we finish 13-4, we will be the number two seed. We will play at home on wild card weekend against whoever the lowest seed is. The next round, we'll have another home playoff game against whoever the lowest seed remaining is. And then if by some fucking miracle to win both of those games, which, let's be clear, I don't think we're winning either of those games, but if we did win both of those games, more than likely we would be going to San Francisco to play them in San Francisco in the NFC Championship game.
Yeah.
I'm going on record right now as an Eagles fan, as someone who has loved this team longer than I have loved anything else in my entire life, aside from family and the Phillies and Flyers. We are not going to the Super Bowl this year. We are not going to the Super Bowl. We are not going to the NFC Championship. And we'll be goddamn lucky if we so much as sniff a win in the playoffs.